The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome back to the program Bartle Ball. He joins us on the telephone in Florida. Hello, Bartle.
Why, good morning, Vic.
Bartle, I had you on the show many moons ago for the second book in a series, and you have been working on this series ever since. Tell us about the Anton Ryder series. How did you get the idea for this?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I originally got the idea because my first book before my novels was a history of the African safari from the first one in 1836 until present times. And I tried to, and that doing that homework taught me that what I'd like to do was to combine two things, academic research, so that I bought all the old 19th century books, you see, of the old African hunters. I bought them in London, read them carefully. Then I also wanted to do physical research in the field myself, and so I went back to Africa, and I had first gone to Africa in 1959 when I wrote my thesis at Harvard on the history of Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, as you know, but I decided that I wanted to do a contemporary safari so I could do the whole history from the beginning until our time, and I went on a safari with my old friend from college, Teddy Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt IV, the great-grandson of the president, and he was not some idle city kid. He had been a SEAL for two terms in Vietnam, and had the highest rank you can get as a SEAL, which is I think it's called commander because it's a naval title. And so Teddy and I went on a safari on foot most of the time, sometimes with no tents, just sleeping bags. And so I learned from doing that book that I like to do the combination of on-the-ground research and academic research. But then, having spent two or three years doing that homework, I had all this material about Africa in the so-called early days around 1900 when the safari began. And so I thought I should turn this into a novel and tell a really story about it, you see. And that became my first novel, which was the White Rhino Hotel, which was the true name of a real hotel in northern Kenya, founded by friends of Isaac Dinesen, and founded by a man called Lord Cranworth, an old Englishman who was a pioneer in East Africa. And Lord Cranworth's son was my father's best friend in the war in North Africa against the Germans, and his daughter married my uncle. So I had that background from the age of, 15 or something, plus I had the safari book. And I used that background to write The White Rhino Hotel, and that got me started.
And you follow that up with a book called A Cafe on the Nile, and that's the book we had you on the show for back in the day. It's been over 20 years ago, and here you are again, and you've kept working on this series. Who is Anton Ryder? Tell us about him.
Well, yes, Anton Ryder, of course, is sort of a composite. First of all, I took the name Ryder because of the great English writer Ryder Haggard in around 1900, who was a friend of my grandfather. And he wrote the first great African novel, King Solomon's Mines. And I thought that was a brilliant book, and it's a long story in itself how he wrote that. But that gave me the name Ryder. And then Anton was the name of the first name of one of the dead sons of one of the great white hunters, so-called, of modern times. And so I created this Anton Ryder, and I had him, I wanted him to have a period of life that I understood. So I had him born when my own father was, who was English, in 1902. And, of course, my father was in the war in Africa, in Ethiopia, Libya, and Egypt. And so I wanted Anton Ryder to have some of those qualities and to have a woman in his life who was a powerful, intelligent lady, better educated than he was because he was an outdoorsman, Anton Ryder. And so I wanted Ryder to represent a lot of what was best of the very complicated old colonial days, but very much of the great of the early environmentalists, because the really first-rate hunters, like my friend Teddy Roosevelt or his grandfather who founded the United States Forest Service, often The serious hunters were not mass killers. They were very discriminating, and they became the first environmentalists in many cases, both in England and in Africa and in America. So I myself never shot the stuff. I wasn't interested in hunting, but I was interested in that period of life. And so Anton Ryder, because he was born in 1902, that let him participate just at the end of World War One in 1918, would go to Africa, and then to be a soldier in the Second World War in 1939 to 45, but also in a very interesting period in Africa that no one knew about, really, which was what, the Cafe in the Nile was about, which was the Italian invasion of Ethiopia in 1935 and 36. And Italy sent almost 500,000 men to Ethiopia, a landlocked country in Africa, in that period. And so I had my friend Anton Ryder on a safari with clients when the Italians invaded Ethiopia. And so I combined that homework with going to Ethiopia myself and going along the same route that my heroes took in the book as they got involved in the Italian war in Ethiopia. And then the most recent book in the series that came out just recently, as you know, We'll Meet Again. In this case, Anton Ryder is by now a sort of older, almost retired white hunter, but the British in their war in Africa needed people like him who knew Africa, and so he got involved in the war in North Africa, as my dad did. My father was too old for that war also, and was very badly wounded there and finally died from his wounds in North Africa fighting the Germans. And in real life, I was amazed to learn that when the Allies, America and England, wanted to send guerrillas and troops into Yugoslavia to start the war against the Germans in Yugoslavia, the rebellion by the Yugoslavs against the German occupation, what did they do? The British and Americans could not fly their agents into Yugoslavia across occupied Europe. It was too dangerous from England. So instead they flew them from, guess where, Egypt and Libya, where my dad was and where I had the background. So I have Anton Ryder in this most recent African novel, which combines World War II in Yugoslavia and North Africa. Our friend Anton Ryder is in North Africa as an older hunter, and the Brits come to him and say, look, we need you and your skills. And so he goes on a mission to Yugoslavia. And in Yugoslavia, he participates in that terrible war between the Germans and the occupied Yugoslavs who were fighting as guerrillas against the Germans. And there the Germans had extermination camps and all the usual stuff, and so I cover that in the book. And then in my usual way, if they wanted to do my homework, I went to Yugoslavia for the second time, I think, 1992-93, during the civil war in Yugoslavia between Bosnia, if you may recall, and Croatia and Serbia, when the Serbs were besieging Sarajevo, you may recall. And I went there over Christmas and New Year's and had just an amazing time up in the mountains with the Bosnians who were fighting the invasion. And that gave me the background for the details in the book We'll Meet Again about World War II in Yugoslavia, because I was in the actual towns. I remember being in a hospital where they were operating on children with no anesthetic, and that hospital plays a role in my book, for example, because I was there myself and saw it. And so that is the fourth and last of the African series. It combines, I hope, adventure and romance and history.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Book Nook on 91.3 WYSO, community-owned public radio for curious listeners.
Well, I must tell you, Vic, because no one ever speaks about you, but they should, and having known you all these years, I want to say that you yourself have contributed so much to modern American literature, because you've kept it alive and you've been a voice for civilization, and God bless you, and I hope you carry on.
Well, you're very kind, Bartle, and I appreciate the fact that I have you back on the program after all these years.
Yes.
And I need to thank your agent, because we rebroadcast that original interview that we did with you recently, and your agent contacted me and said, thanks for doing that interview with Bartle all those years ago. Would you like to do another one? And here you are. It's one of these miracles.
No, I think we're both lucky, but I appreciate the chance to speak to your listeners, because they're people who read and care, and that's what we need today.
Bartle, you mentioned a moment ago how when your dad was in World War II, he was a little bit past his prime physically, I assume, to be in that conflict.
It was an interesting story because when he was a young man in England, he was captain of every sport. At Eton, which is a school with 800 kids, he was captain of the three toughest sports, rugby, the wall game, and the field game, and a captain at Oxford of rugby, and then played in the national rugby team, the Harlequins. He was a big, tough man. But they weren't drafting people his age when the war started in England, but he signed up 2 weeks after the Germans invaded Poland, and he was then a young member of parliament, and he couldn't be drafted. And my American mother said, look, there's no reason for you to go to war. You can do so much else for England. He said, no, I'm going. And so he signed up, and he joined the Coldstream Guards, the oldest regiment in England, you know, the Redcoats who were in the Battle of Waterloo. And they were at Dunkirk before he joined them. And then he was sent to North Africa with the Coldstream Guards to fight Rommel and the Germans and the Italians. And there he was very badly wounded. He was still in good health, but I mean, he wasn't a young man. He was in his 40s.
Mm.
And he was very badly wounded, shot in the lung with a heavy bullet, and in the desert, and spent hours lying in the desert. And his men who loved him got him back to Cairo. He nearly bled to death in an ambulance hundreds of miles going over the rough desert. And then he left the hospital without orders and went back across the desert on his own to rejoin his unit. And they said, no, you're sick, send him back to Cairo. He did that a second time when he was stronger and rejoined the Coldstream Guards when they had the famous breakout from the Battle of Tobruk. You may remember Tobruk. It was one of the two battles in World War II when the British surrendered a lot of men. One was in Singapore. The other was Tobruk.
Mm-hmm.
And the night before the surrender in Tobruk, the only regiment that said, we're going to fight our way out, we've never surrendered, was the Coldstream Guards. And he helped to lead that breakout out of Tobruk, and they escaped through the German lines. And Churchill mentioned that a couple of days later in the House of Commons. So he had a very tough war, and then he finally died from that wound to his lung after the war, and died when I was, 10.
Mm.
And so I wanted, so Anton Ryder has a little bit of him in it as well.
Mm-hmm, because as the book opens, he is trying to conceal the fact that he's not 100%. He's having problems with his leg. They send him parachuting into Yugoslavia. There's so much great action in this. And we also have the tension, the situation with his wife. They're estranged. And his wife is having an affair with this guy who ends up being the one who sends Anton into Yugoslavia. I love the way you build this tension.
Well, that, you know, is an old story in the Bible where there is a king who sends his wife's lover into the into combat where he's killed. So I had that theme in my mind. And so this is a British intelligence officer in Cairo. And there were always a few Marxists in those days, intelligence, unfortunately, with the Brits. And so they send Anton Ryder to Yugoslavia, thinking he's not going to survive it, perhaps, you know. But he does, and he comes back to Cairo and tries, to, you know, at the end of the book, he's coming back to his wife, and I hope their romance is resuming. And again, I try to combine history and adventure and romance.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say either that there's some romance in Yugoslavia. And
yes, there is.
This is a pretty powerful thing. What you do in this, I mean, I said to myself when I got to that part in the book where this American officer shows up, I said to myself, oh, no, you're not doing this. And that is, to me, the most thrilling section of the book because Anton starts pursuing this guy, and I won't give away any more, but, man, when this finally comes to a culmination, this is one of the most thrilling, exciting things I've read in a novel in years.
Well, I appreciate that very much, very much, Vic. That's very generous of you. It's very hard, you know, as a fiction writer, to find original ways for two things. One is sex, and the other is probably violent death. It's hard to be original. And I don't try to do that in the case of the first, but in the case of these violent conclusions, I try to have a different expression of men's conflict. And so I think that does happen in the book. And I myself was up in the mountains exactly where all that took place. And so I was up there actually up in the Yugoslavian War on Christmas Eve in 1992, 93. And I was in a bunker on Christmas Eve, the only American. They were about five or six of us. And the other guys were all young Croatians who were fighting the Serbian invasion. And one of them was the lead violinist of the Sarajevo Symphony Orchestra, and he had brought his guitar. So we were all overnight in this little bunker with a log roof and one bulb on a wire, and we'd all brought scraps of stuff to eat and drink. I brought some sausages. The other guys had the local drink, which is plum brandy. And then the guitarist, the violinist, took out his guitar and played on Christmas Eve in the bunker in Yugoslavia, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, because I was American. And we all cried. I mean, it was just an amazing experience. And so I had this background in Yugoslavia, and I wanted to get that feeling into the book, what it was really like in wartime.
Quaffing Schlivovitz. My guest is Bartel Bol, and we're talking about We'll Meet Again. And a sub-story, a subplot in this is Anton's two sons.
One of them gets killed in the war in North Africa, and the other one is fighting his way with the British across North Africa, because that was a war that went on for about 2 years, back and forth across the Mediterranean coast of Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, and Algeria. And at the end, the culmination was when the Brits and the Americans landed in a big way in Algeria and Tunisia. And when I was doing my homework for this, I went to those battlefields along the coast where we landed, and where amazing thing was that the French who were the Vichy French, who controlled French North Africa, the French shot and killed several thousand Americans and British troops as we landed in North Africa on the way to liberating Paris. Hardly anybody knows that history. It was very disturbing because we all love Paris and the French, but it was very disturbing to realize, you know, how that happened and that we were fired on by the French Navy, Air Force, and troops as we landed in Algeria. And then they quickly surrendered. After 3 or 4 days, the French troops surrendered. And then the next day, a French officer shot the French general who had commanded the surrender and killed him. I mean, it was a real mess and an extraordinary period in history. And that invasion was the one that took place before Normandy, because we wanted to begin by controlling the Mediterranean. That meant North Africa. And then once you had the Med, then we could land in Italy, and then we could land in Normandy, and that's what happened.
This subplot with his living son, Denby, is another really thrilling one. And Denby is a lot like his dad. He's very resourceful, and I love this portion where Denby is with these French soldiers, and they're watching what's going on, and he's watching them because he's trying to decide, now, they're going to have to make a choice here. Are they with me or against me? I love that you just build all this tension with these things going on throughout the book.
Well, thank you, because that was absolutely exactly what happened. We did not know, America and England did not know, that when our men landed in North Africa, the French in Algeria and Tunisia would resist the landing because they were commanded by the French in occupied Germany, or whether they would welcome us. And so at first the French did resist, and they killed a couple of thousand of our men, and then they quickly surrendered, and after that the French never had much resistance to the British and American program. But Denby, as a young agent who had been landed on the coast, didn't know whether the French would be his friends or his enemies. And indeed, they changed during that time. But it's all accurate history. I mean, I was, you know, I went to Algeria and Tunisia. I did all the homework I could. And it was a huge education for me.
Well, it's really a page-turner. And you give a reader their money's worth. It's almost 400 pages. And it's just, you have all this action going on in here. Another favorite section for me is these guys looting antiquities and entering the tomb and all that. It's just really great. But we need to talk about the dwarf, because he's a big part of the story.
Yes. Well, the dwarf first appeared in the original of the four African novels, as you may recall, in the White Rhino Hotel, where he was the bartender. And in real life, the White Rhino Hotel exactly was on the equator. And they used to say that a man could have a beer on one side of the hotel and relieve himself with beer on the other. And the dwarf was the bartender and saw the world and was very wise. And he was one of these people that you didn't want to be his enemy, you wanted to be his friend. And if people scoffed or were rude to him, he never forgot it. And if someone helped him, he never forgot that. And so he and Anton Ryder, when Anton Ryder was a young sort of refugee after World War I hunting in East Africa, they became friends there and helped each other. And then the dwarf was a poor bartender, but he ends up in Cairo owning a fancy restaurant and a cafe on the Nile, title of the book, A Cafe on the Nile. And the dwarf there becomes an important rich figure in Cairo and a friend to Anton Ryder and his two sons. And so that theme of that friendship goes through those four novels, and I hope serves us well in the most recent one, We'll Meet Again.
He is a huge part of the story. Bartle Bull joins us. And Bartle, when I read a book like this, I'll usually find a peripheral character who will become my favorite character. And I'm wondering if you can guess who that is, who my favorite peripheral character is.
Well, I would have guessed the dwarf, to tell you the truth. But
no,
maybe it's Lord Cranworth. No, I really don't know. I would have guessed the dwarf.
He's not peripheral. He's a big part of the story.
That's true.
I don't call him peripheral. My favorite peripheral character is Anton's other friend, the German.
Oh, yes, Ernst von Decken. Yes. Yes, I like him too. Yes, I agree.
Oh, man.
I didn't want to have a simple tale at the beginning, at the end of World War I, when the Germans were all evil and our side was all great. Because the Germans in the First World War were, it was long before Nazi times. They weren't Nazis, and the German army in East Africa in the First World War was famously gentlemanly. They looked after their prisoners. They treated the blacks well, all that kind of stuff, which was not true in the Second World War. But the interesting historical thing is that in both World Wars, the German commanders in Africa, which in the First War was von Lettow Vorbeck, and in the Second World War was, of course, General Erwin Rommel, they were so far away from Germany that they became very independent. They weren't run by the German high command day-to-day, or in the Second World War by Hitler. They really couldn't communicate and administer. And Rommel was a gentleman, and as Churchill said once in the House of Commons, and an honorable man. He used to look after his prisoners and all that, and indeed, the Nazis later made Rommel commit suicide because they feared he was going to lead the army against Hitler. And so I wanted the Germans to be a little bit more complicated, especially in the First World War when there were no Nazis. And so I have this character, von Decken, who becomes friendly with Anton before the Second World War and after the First War in the interwar period. And so that friendship continues in a certain way in World War II, even though they were on different sides. They were very, very old friends. And so von Decken, of course, is wounded in the hospital, and the dwarf thinks he's a bit of a barbarian, and so that gives us some nice tension. But I think von Decken is interesting. I agree with that. And part of that is because he was from a German family that didn't live in Germany between the wars, didn't experience the rise of Hitler and all that. They were East African Germans in the country that is now called Tanzania and used to be Tanganyika. And so it's a different background, and I wanted to have some understanding of what that was like.
He has a very annoying personality. And,
yes.
but he's a key figure. Even though he's peripheral, he ends up doing something in the story that is very important, and the way that you execute this is really brilliant. My guest is Bartle Bull. We're talking about We'll Meet Again. And did you mention in an email that you're working on something else?
Yes, I must tell you I am. After I finished the first, my first four African books, the safari book, then the first novels, I wanted to write about somewhere else other than Africa for a while, and I thought, now what was, but at my period is kind of the between the two world wars, you see, and so I've studied that so hard, and I thought, now what was the most interesting place in the world, totally different than Africa, and I thought, and I decided it was Shanghai in China, of course, because Shanghai was the fourth biggest city in the world, and it had three cities in one. It had the Chinese city, it had a small section run by the Brits, and then it had the international city, which was really a very corrupt section run by the French, and then it had all these settlers. After the First World War, it had white Russians who escaped the communists coming down from Vladivostok, they did, in eastern Russia. And then in the Second World War, of course, the period between the wars, it had a lot of Jewish settlers in Shanghai. Mm. So I decided that I would write a novel set in Shanghai, which I did, and that is called Shanghai Station. And that came out about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. Then I wrote a second book on that same thesis, about the white Russians in Shanghai when they're fighting the communists in Shanghai. And that is called China Star, a name of a ship that takes our hero to Shanghai. Mm. But now I'm working on a book that really interests me, set in Shanghai. It's going to be called A Dinner in Shanghai. But that won't be out probably for a year or two. But the thesis of it is in the 1920s, when the communists of China were trying to have a revolution in China, and the communists in Russia, who had been in power for 5 years in the early 20s, they both wanted to get together and support a big revolution in China. And Lenin and Stalin sent agents, important agents, well-known ones, to Shanghai and to China to help a Chinese communist revolution. And people who think that this communist alliance between China and Russia began 2 years ago are crazy. It began in 1923 when the first Soviet agents went from Russia to China to work together to build a second revolution. And then, of course, they both opposed America in the Korean War, etc. So this is a 100-year relationship between the communist parties of China and Soviet Russia. And so my novel I'm working on right now is a novel set against that background, combining that history and adventure with a romantic relationship between a white Russian survivor in Shanghai and his a girlfriend who is half American and half Chinese, the daughter of missionaries. But the extraordinary thing I've been learning is the relationship between the communist parties of China and Russia has been an association at the highest level for just over 100 years.
Bartle, we'll be watching out for that one. It's really been a pleasure having you on the program again.
Well, thank you, Vic, and thank you for all you do for the writers in our country.
My guest has been Bartle Ball. We've been talking about the Anton Rider series and other things, and the most recent one is We'll Meet Again, and for us here at the Book Nook, we will meet again. Thanks for listening.